If you were writing a story about someone who made a huge impact on your life, what would you make sure was included, and what might you leave out? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author. We're continuing a 13-week series on the book of Matthew through the next quarter. This is the first gospel in the New Testament, and I'm pleased to tonight to have with me conversation partners Troy Fitzgerald and Jennifer Ogden, who both serve as pastors at the Walla Walla University Church. Thank you both for joining me this quarter.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
As we get started on the book of Matthew here, tell me a little bit about the author of this book. What can we know about Matthew? Who was he?
Matthew is clearly a tax collector. We know that just by looking at some of the stories. I think there is some internal evidence in the stories that this person was skillfully organized. May not necessarily be like our IRS in that way, but skillfully organized and very specific about certain details that would be important to.
And like our modern IRS, well loved by his countrymen.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Well, I think he was highly educated, too. You know, you can't be accountable for the money in a kingdom if you don't know what's up. And I think he was very educated and very diligent. And he also has a laser sharp focus, which I think we'll see over these next 13 weeks.
I think that's probably the case. When he comes to Jesus, one of the first things that happens when we read the accounts of Matthew, he throws a party for Jesus and he invites his friends. What does that suggest about Matthew as a person from the start?
I don't know. I think initially some of the assumptions people have about tax collectors is they don't have any friends. But And again, back to the IRS. I don't know too many people that work at the IRS, but that's not the easiest job to do. But apparently, there were many people gathered. The nature of those people who gathered might be very interesting to talk about.
Kind of guilt by association, but also what kind of friends do you have when you're a tax collector? You have other friends like you. And it says that there were tax collectors and sinners gathered. But I find it fascinating that what he wanted to do was introduce them to his friend Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. And so now he takes an entire book that we've divided up into 28 chapters, and we have this book of Matthew that is apparently written by this tax collector after his conversion, after Jesus ascended to heaven. Jesus is gone now, and Matthew says, I want to further tell the story of Jesus. What kind of features from the book would you like to take note of, or that you would like our hearers to understand? Are there things about Matthew that make it seem a little different than Mark, Luke, or John?
Matthew is probably more verbose than some of the other gospel writers, and he tells it just from a very almost casual kind of familial, dialogical perspective. It's very, you know, sit around the campfire, let's tell stories. This is what happened, and here's the story.
Okay.
It does have that rhythm to it where there's lots of stories and there's lots of conversation, but they are structured keenly. It's broken up into five major sections, five discourses. So you see some themes emerge from just the structure of the Gospel of Matthew that kind of scream out a little bit about who his audience is and what's important to him as a person who is a Hebrew. So I think those are some identifying marks. What the five books alone is telling, because, of course, every Jewish kid growing up knew to memorize the five books, not just the names of the books, but they memorized major sections of the five books of Moses, the Pentateuch. And so clearly he's writing in the style of somebody who would be willing to read that and respond to it.
And now these five sections do have some reference to law as well. In fact, we hear Jesus in a number of places, especially in the, we'll come to in a few weeks when we talk about the Sermon on the Mount. You have heard it said in the law, but I tell you, and takes the and Jesus takes the Old Testament law and deepens it, right? Who would you say is his audience? Because when I read Mark, I get an idea that, you know, Mark explains some of the Jewish rituals and assumes his audience wouldn't understand them. Does Matthew do any of that?
Not so much. I think he assumes that this is for your average Joe. You know, this is your everyday person who's heard about Jesus or may have heard about the stories of Jesus later, and they're looking to understand it more fully. And I think he explains what happened and why it was happening, and he just really gets into this idea of a kingdom and this kingdom that Jesus was leading. And that's, you know, that's one of his major themes that comes up in the book. And I think that it's so great that he just speaks to people to their understanding.
I think those people get it. The people that would probably get it the most would be a Jewish mindset. Mm-hmm. Because when you just look at the themes that emerge. I mean, you watch, it's really the only gospel that describes the attack on Jesus as a child. In other words, the where Herod tries to kill the child or children. So what other Old Testament story echoes that? Well, that's the story of, you know, Moses. So there seems to be this idea that, you know, what Jesus does is going to mirror, echo what the Jews did long ago. And I don't know, I guess the way I've seen it is that every time Israelites failed in the Old Testament, or at least in the Exodus, Jesus does the same thing but wins, fulfills, makes it, walks through unscathed, faithful, goes to the mountain, and brings down the law. I mean, so there's so many moments where you can just see this is almost like Exodus all over.
Except now Jesus is walking where Israel walked and where they failed. He keeps succeeding. He's tempted and he succeeds. He gives the new law that reaches the heart. Jesus ultimately self-sacrifices himself, and somewhat like Moses was willing to do. One of the frequently used words of Matthew is fulfilled. He likes to go back to the Old Testament and show how prophecy, how the prophets have a statement about the Messiah that ends up being fulfilled in Christ. But when I read some of those in the original context of the Old Testament, they don't seem to scream to me, Jesus, am I missing something?
I don't think we always understand what all the prophecies were, and it's so nice to have that clarification, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and to see that come true in a person, in someone who's walking that you could touch and see and watch the miracles of.
And just maybe as they spent time with Jesus, their understanding of the Old Testament expanded just in the life of this person. They said, well, these Old Testament prophecies take on new meaning in light of if Jesus really is the Messiah. And we'll talk about that as we go.
Well, you asked them, are you missing something? Well, probably. I know I am. when I look at that text, or I look at those Old Testament passages, you know, the connection to today, or to especially to the time of Christ as they were fulfilled, you wonder, how does this connect? Obviously, back in the Old Testament, they didn't fully understand. In the day of Christ, when he came, they didn't fully understand. And even as I open up the book of Romans or the book of Matthew or Lamentations, I don't fully understand. So there's something to that. And if they were to take all of our commentaries today that we think we fully understand and we write, you know, if we could be here another, you know, 100, 150, 200, maybe even 1,000 years, we're going to find that our commentaries today didn't fully understand.
They scratched the surface. But there's something about finding new insights that kind of thrills our heart when we see a new glimmer of God in the pages of Scripture, or in this case, in a person, in Jesus. Now, Matthew starts out his gospel somewhat like Luke. They both include a genealogy. Mark and John do not have these genealogies, but Matthew's genealogy has some unique features to it that may be, if he's writing for a Jewish audience, they may be considered a little unique. I read through the gospel and I see some names that jump out to me from a patriarchal society as shocking. They're ladies. Mm-hmm. In this genealogy. Can you tell me something about the ladies in this genealogy?
Well, there's five of them that show up, and I think all but one of them have a questionable history. We have a harlot, we have a Moabite, we have the temptress of King David, all right? We've got a crazy milieu of women, and then we have the mother of Jesus, Mary, who shows up on the stage.
Yes, they're not just women, and they're not just dubious women, they're not Jews. Mm-hmm. They're not Jewish women. These are Gentiles. You know, aside from the mother of Jesus, all four of them were converts.
Ruth, Bathsheba. Mm-hmm.
But notice, even Rahab's mentioned in the book of Hebrews as the people of faith. So these are believers who were, and I'll say, adopted into the family who are of the direct line of the Messiah. This is not what you want at a family reunion unveiled. You know, you just don't want to open up and go through, well, we finally got our genealogy done, and guess what? That would be troubling for Jewish people to read this and to see those names. It would be foreign to have women. It'd be foreign to have, these people of somewhat questionable character in some cases, and then for them to be Gentiles. Wow.
Why would they be included in this genealogy then? What point is Matthew trying to make? Couldn't he have just swept it under the rug and kept quiet a little? Why does he include them? What is he doing for his audience? Or what does it speak to you? What should it speak to our hearers, to me today, that these people are part of Jesus' lineage?
It's always fascinating that we think Jesus had to come from a perfect line. And God just says, you know, I can use absolutely anyone in an unexpected way, very plainly, day-to-day people who are willing to be a part of it. I'm willing to use them.
Yeah. I like the idea of adoption. I do. I think that this line, these people are adopted in, but notice whose line this is. This is not Mary's line. This is Joseph's line.
This seems to be Joseph's, right?
This is Joseph. This is the line of Joseph, who is the husband of Mary. So if this is Joseph's line, Jesus is also adopted into the messianic family of Joseph. That's the only way I'm getting in is through adoption.
Through adoption. And Joseph is a faithful man. When we read his history, he could have put Mary away, but he doesn't. He could have divorced her when he found out she was pregnant, and he doesn't. He's told by the angel to hang on and keep the baby. We continue reading, and we find that the Magi come to visit. It's only in Matthew, like you mentioned, Troy, that the Magi show up. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful picture. In a brief nutshell, the story of the Magi, we think of it tied to Christmas. What does it suggest to Matthew's audience? He's the only one that includes it. Quick synopsis. What might this say?
There is a king. And important people need to come see the most important person.
Yeah. Jesus the King, the Messiah has come. If you were a Jew, this word Messiah is loaded with meaning, packed with meaning. What is its essential meaning? What does the word Messiah mean? Mashiach in the Hebrew. Yeah. What is it?
It means the anointed one, doesn't it? The one who is anointed.
Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of people in the Old Testament who are anointed. What type of people? Kings, priests,
and prophets.
Prophets.
And all of this suggests Jesus was one like that.
All three of them, yeah.
Our time goes by quickly. Next week, we'll be looking at the beginning of the ministry of Jesus. But I want to give my thanks to my conversation partners, Troy and Jen, and also my thanks to David Olson and Jared Miller, our program engineers. And for all of you who are listening out there, I want to say thank you to you as well. And for the good word, I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.